Welcome to the Fight White Genocide Podcast with Laura, Ken, and Jeff, where we talk about whatever we think is important in the global struggle against white genocide. This is podcast number 2, recorded January 5th, 2018. Today's topic is more on tactics and narratives.
Ken, you mentioned something that you think a certain talking point isn't very good. You had a better one. Was it anti-racist as a code word for anti-white, or...
No, I think what
you just say that because I'm white. You have a better way to say
that. Yeah, yeah. Basically, my talking point on I know that Horace and a lot of people have the response like when somebody calls you a racist, what do you say? Right. And Horace says you're just saying that because I'm white. Anti-racist is a code word for anti-white, and I tend to think that that might be a decent kind of catchphrase to say on Twitter, but in real world interaction, it just sounds too, I don't know. It just sounds too kind of cliche, or I don't know. But my response to somebody like in real life, if they say you're just a racist, well, what I say is, well, you say that anybody is a racist if they don't want to destroy whites. What else is new?
Okay.
Or I mean, you could say, well, anti-whites say that anybody who doesn't hate whites is a racist. What else is new? That kind of thing. That's kind of what I just try to think of a more realistic, real world approach. And I honestly don't have a problem with Horace's his reply. I just think it might sound kind of bottled and canned to.
Yeah,
to an anti-white,
and it just doesn't sound.
It doesn't sound real, like something you'd say in a real conversation. You know what I mean?
I think what you're saying is totally correct too, Ken. I think it's a
Well, Bob had his own version of it. Like I think I remember him saying sometime like when somebody would call him a racist, he'd say, "Well, thank God because you call it anybody." Blah blah blah. I forget what his exact quote was, but it was. Under the same kind of guise of what I was just saying.
He said, you call anyone that disagrees with you a racist, and I certainly disagree with you.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. That's better than my response. Thank you, Jeff. So, I mean, there you go. That's how you respond. You want to kind of put in the anti-white, you know, call him an anti-white. And again, it all depends on the conversation. Like, is it a cordial kind of friendly? If it is, then you may not want to start throwing out anti-white, but you can bring up, well, these are anti-white views that you hold.
The word itself has to be discredited. Whatever you say, you're trying to make this, just disempower this term.
Exactly.
And the people using it.
Right, you want to deflate them.
You want to make it so that this word racist, and anyone hears that word, they're saying to themselves, any normal white person hears that word, they're saying to themselves, this guy is running a scam. This guy hates white people. That's the environment we want to create. Instead of now when they pee their pants, you know, and say, no, I'm not a racist. That's the response now. You want it to be, this guy's running a scam. This guy hates white people. He's just using that term. To try to shut me up, to try to demoralize me.
I do think that kind of sentiment has definitely increased. Like if you go to, you know, conservative sites like Breitbart, that people kind of are pretty much aware of that now, that it's a scam, that people are using that term or just running a scam. So that's exactly why they've moved over to white supremacists now, and they're going to help us disarm that term.
That's even worse from their perspective, because we don't want to supremacize anyone. So, objectively, they're wrong. Objectively and factually, it's an incorrect statement. You know, racist is just a completely made-up term, you know, like heretic. Like, just, like I said, just like calling a Jew a kike. You know? If you call a Jew a kike, would you start arguing about whether he's a kike or not and say, no, I'm not a kike. Or, yeah, I'm a kike. Yeah. What is it? You know,
exactly.
You know, it's just, you hate me, you know?
Well, it's kind of, I mean, it goes into that thing that black people have done with the N-word, where they've actually embraced it. But we're not doing that, of course. But it's one of those things. Like, I mean, I guess the only thing worse than embracing it would be, affirming it and denying it.
Yeah, I mean, whether you say yes or no, you're doing it wrong. Yes, I'm a racist. Right. No, I'm not a racist. Either way, you're doing it wrong.
That's kind of the way I think of it, is that if you confirm or deny, then you're actually affirming their entire worldview.
But one thing, like that Bethany Sherman, I don't know if you've heard of her. No. She had that OG Analytics, which has something to do with marijuana. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, in Eugene, Oregon, yeah.
And she did resign, but she didn't back down. She didn't grovel.
She said.
I thought that was pretty big. It. What?
I loved what she said in response to it. She did great. She deserves a marijuana factory.
But that's compare that story.
Explain the story for me, guys.
Well, they found out that she doesn't hate white people, and they made a big deal out of it. And then she came out and basically said, yeah, I don't hate white people, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it, that kind of thing. They called her a Nazi and a racist and said she's tied with neo-Nazi, white supremacist, xenophobic racist. And then she came out and said, well, I don't hate white people. I forget her exact quote. We could dig it up, but it's a great quote. She didn't back down, and what she said was perfectly reasonable.
She said, I find it extremely disconcerting that it is admired and revered to have gay pride, black pride, Asian pride, or pride in any other cultural heritage. But if you have white pride, it automatically makes you a Nazi and you are ostracized, attacked, and lynched by your community. I admit, wow. I am proud that I am white and I'm not ashamed of my heritage. And I admit that I have been so conditioned to feel shame about this pride that I discreetly sought community where I could.
Wow.
Perfect. Yeah. Brilliant. In fact, I mean, honestly, we should have something up about her on our site.
And I say compare that to Paula Deen. Okay. She grovels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gee, I was horrible.
I'm not a racist.
I think that shows a change in attitude, a change in consciousness. I mean, it's only one example, but we'll see. We never had examples like that before. You know,
now we got Nealon guy.
And now we got Nealon.
You know, Nealon did it essentially the same kind of thing. He said, I'm not a white supremacist, I'm pro-white.
Yeah, and then what did he do? He decided after he announced that he was reading Kevin McDonald's books that he decided that he had to announce that he was reading something on Islamic something, didn't he? Didn't he post that, because he was getting hit by the anti-whites and all the hate that was coming because he posted that picture of the book that he was reading, Kevin McDonald's book.
And then he virtue signaled and said
Well, I believe that's how I saw it. He posted a post about something about he was doing a book on Islam now or something.
So he's saying I'm not a bigot because I read a book about Islam?
On Islam, yeah. So after something like that, yeah.
Gong, you don't do that. You don't do that either. No virtue signaling and... Yeah, that's always the worst when you get called a racist and then the guy is trying to prove how anti-white he is. Essentially, at the end goal here is because right now, whites are afraid to object to white genocide. The anti-whites are not afraid to push genocide. They're not, I mean, yeah. They can go on CNN. CNN will defend them and pretend that they're a victim if they push genocide and people object to them. That's now been proven. That's not hypothetical. That whole paradigm needs, that table needs to be turned over and switched. I mean,
it is happening, right? We are seeing that. You know, it's funny that you say that, Ken, because, I mean, look at what we're looking at with Ciccarello. You know, Ciccarello just... After all that happened with him over the past year, and yet he winds up landing a job with NYU. Like, could you imagine if it was any white, pro-white that had said the same things that he would have said? You know, your career would be ruined. You wouldn't get another job. And it was too funny. Ez texted me yesterday. He goes, as we were talking about the Ciccarello thing, and he goes, oh, they've just – Ciccarello hired by NYU. They've just relocated one of their own, like the church did with the child molesterers, Church of PC. You know, I think that's exactly it.
Well, one thing we talked about in the other podcast was that, like, Tucker Carlson has mentioned white genocide. And you see a lot, like you can go through in Newsweek and everybody's talking about that Ciccarello guy and his call for white genocide. But essentially everybody that's these media outlets have responded to it as in like a violent genocide, that he's calling for violence and that kind of stuff. And they're not really talking about what we're talking about. They're not putting white genocide in its correct frame and the correct narrative that we are talking about it. So even though they're mentioning white genocide, they're still affirming this idea that genocide requires killing. So at the end of the day, like when Tucker Carlson mentions white genocide, he's not really saying anything that affirms our position. He's just, talking about a violent genocide of whites. So we can't really grovel to these people that are bringing it up, even though, you know, bringing up the phrase white genocide is a good thing. Mm. We'll take what we can get on that perspective. But
well, that in itself is huge. You know, that's the same thing I was saying to HD yesterday. Can you imagine 4 years ago, you know, we were struggling to get any white into the discourse. You know, we would get excited when we would see a single, you know, in media talking and mentioning the term any white. So if these guys, in whatever context they're talking about, are mentioning our terminology, then that's a huge win for us.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I agree. I remember that back in the day when we had to create a thread on Bob's site for news articles about white genocide or whatever. And once in a while, once a month, we'd get one or something and put it up there. And now today it's, you know, every hour you're going to find something probably.
I mean, I think 100% the mantra is still our most effective tool in breaking down what's going on. And it really, you know, it breaks it down. You know, what sane black man wouldn't oppose having his country flooded with millions of non-blacks. You know, I think it points out the contradiction and in such a short, you know, so 222 words, is it? We need to keep hammering that, keep pushing our method, our strategy and tactics, and showing how much effect we've had. I mean, like we're just saying, like 4 years ago, we wouldn't get, you know, one article to post in that thread, you know, mantra in the news. And now it's like, I mean, I know we don't all post in there nowadays, but it's insane the amount of articles that mention white genocide on any white.
Yeah, you need one person dedicated to
do that.
To do that. Now, I go to Google News every day and I look up stuff. A lot of it, like right now, is being swarmed with the Ciccarello stuff. But there's always something else as well about, white genocide, about flyers being... Mm-hmm. At a university or something. Every day there's something new about that. It's a good thing. And it's only going to amplify. I mean, until white genocide stops, our message is only going to multiply and amplify from here on out until the program is ended. Mm-hmm. And the answers are to whatever said to you is always in the mantra. I mean, I still have to go back. I still use that Bugs Buddy. That Gar 5 made a program called Bugs Buddy. Then I put it up in a web version and I still find myself going back there. Cause sometimes like, I don't feel like typing anything up and the answers are all right here. So copy and paste.
It really is. I mean, it was a brilliant tool for our guys, exactly for that. Hey, just to be able to go and, you know, scroll down, find the anti-white talking point that they've presented to you, and find the response that talking point. It's, I mean, you don't get easier than that.
Right, and people always say, "Oh, well, you're just repeating these phrases and these talking points." Well, yeah, we know that we're doing it. The difference is you have no idea that you've been brainwashed into repeating your cliches and your responses. Your responses are all canned, and were fed to you from a $1 trillion brainwashing campaign.
Yeah.
Except you're too dumb to realize it.
That's it. You know, I wanted to just go back there a second. You said, that this is going to keep going until it's over. I think Bob you know, Bob always said that this will never be over. You know, it's going to be a fight that we'll always have to be in for our people in racial awareness. You know, we're always going to be attacked, or unless we become aware that we are a group and that we, you know, that we need to or have the right to self-determination. And, you know, I think Bob also said it, borders were stupid, you know, that the group needs to have a racial policy. We need to have racial awareness amongst the group, you know, that it is treasonous if you were to go outside of your group, and those sorts of things. So I think it's going to be forever, right? We're going to be fighting this fight.
Oh, sure. Even if the policies are all ended, you're still always going to have to be on guard.
Yeah.
Right. And, looking for the subversion and any direction moving towards back where we are today.
Yeah, I talk about winning the propaganda war, but it's never completely won. You know,
right?
It's an ongoing struggle.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
And I mean, that's the alt-right. They say, oh, you know, or not alt-right, but you know, they say if we were to stop immigration now, it was, you know, it's still going to be white genocide with the amount of non-whites that are in the, you know, in the country. So it comes to that awareness of white people being aware that they're white people and that they, you know, genetic morality and it shouldn't, we don't want to mix, you know, it's treasonous if you do. I mean, how do you get that across to normal, regular white people and without sounding like a Nazi? I mean, really, if you start getting into that about talking about genetic morality or, you know, picking your genes and wanting the best, you know, how do you even broach that? I don't think we can talk about
well,
that.
Well, I mean, that's something Bob brought up, is that once we have designer genes and you're allowed to, you know, pick the genes and create your own babies, that's pretty much a solution for white genocide.
White genocide. Yeah,
I don't think it is at all.
I've wondered that.
Bob's point was,
I've debated that in my mind too.
See, Bob's point there was that it'll give us a rhetorical talking point when non-whites start choosing to look more white. Then we'll be able to say, well, see, you know.
Yeah,
but they're
white. White's purple. But my point is, now we'll have a bunch of people that have superficial white traits walking around, but don't have white consciousness, because we don't know where consciousness comes from. We don't know what the genes are for it. So I think it'll be a disaster, because we won't be able to tell white, real white people from these fake white, you know, designer white people.
Well, that was the thing, like with Michael Jackson. He was the richest black man on earth, and
he wanted to be white. Yeah.
He spent all of his money to bleach his skin and adopt white kids. Well, the other flip of the coin are the tanning booths with whites doing that kind of stuff to be black. This whole diversity and the brainwashing, it's not good for anybody. It's not good for black identity. It's not good for white identity. It's good for nobody.
No.
It's just confusing. I mean, what they're doing is confusing races, trying to to just completely discombobulate everything, the genders, races, and it's to where everything's confusing.
No identity.
Right. No identity at all.
The natural state is loyalty to your own kind.
Right.
So now whites are able to shift that loyalty to abstract concepts and wordist ideals. But it's not reciprocated. Now, you may be loyal to humanity, but humanity's not loyal to you. And you might be loyal to the... I mean, look at what that happened to that.
Look what happened to that
Antifa protester. I think it was in San Francisco or Oakland. They shunned him. The non-whites just started shunning him and started demanding that he prove himself more than everybody else because he was white.
Mm-hmm.
And they, you know, he was in their mind. He wasn't one of them. He was just a white guy.
Yeah.
Even to these so-called anti-racists.
Yeah.
So.
Well, yeah. I mean, what was it? One of the spokesmen of the Democratic Party said went on like CNN or MSNBC and said, "I don't think white people should be leading our party anymore," and that kind of stuff. I mean, they're it's not even a secret anymore that you know this. And I think what you said, Jeff, there was a pretty good meme, something about you might be loyal to humanity, but humanity is not loyal to you.
Yeah,
and it's only a matter of, time before the white anti-whites figure this out. They are going to figure this out.
Yeah. Well, isn't that the same meme that says, you know, what is it? Loyalty to the whites is treasonous to humanity or something like that? Or is it the other way around?
That's their talking point. And yeah, I suppose they're right.
Yeah, that was that professor, Noel
Ignatieff.
Treasonous to whiteness is loyalty to humanity.
Right. There you go. It was the other way around, yeah.
But not blackness, right? Or Jewishness or Chineseness or Japaneseness.
Exactly.
Only whiteness. Only for whiteness is bad. For blackness is fine. And, you know, Tucker wouldn't be talking about white genocide if it wasn't for Bob Whitaker and our work.
It wouldn't
be coming up at all. So in that regard, our job is to make sure we make as long as he's saying the as long as he's putting the word out, the phrase out there, you know, that's good. Our job is to make sure we make it clear that genocide doesn't mean killing. Genocide is getting rid of race by any means.
Right. If it wasn't for us, like what Tucker would be talking about is how Democrats are the real racists. Rather than mentioning white genocide, that would be the talking point. Like when somebody goes up and says, yeah, I want all white people dead. Oh, well, you're just a racist against white people. And that would be the talking point. And of course, many people still do use that talking point. The conservatives use that talking point. But now people are using anti-white and white genocide, rather than using these points that just affirm the religion of political correctness and its whole concept of racism and anti-racism, which is just a false dichotomy.
Yeah. You're pro-white or anti-white. I mean, everyone that claims to be anti-racist is, in fact, anti-white. And, you know, you just got to scrape a little bit off the surface to find that.
Yep.
They treat whites completely different from everybody else. They never call out non-whites for doing things that they call white people for.
Right.
And they never make any, you know, significant effort anyway.
Yeah. And of course, all the other races are allowed to have their own distinctly homogeneous homelands, and white people are not. And that's the main issue.
Yeah. Only white countries get sued for not opening their borders, letting the third world pour in.
Yep. And white people are called the only people called racist if we don't allow ourselves to be drowned away in a sea of diversity. We're the ones that are called racist and Nazis if we object. Everybody else is allowed to maintain their race and culture and civilization other than us. That's why the whole dichotomy of racism and anti-racism is just it's a con. It's a genocidal scam being perpetrated onto white people, period.
Yeah. One of their tactics is to say we have a monopoly on immoral things or bad things, or like hate, intolerance, discrimination. Where in fact, we don't have a monopoly on these things. You know, yeah, I hate you anyways. I admit it. You hate white people and won't admit it. So we don't have any monopoly on hate. We don't have a monopoly on tolerance, on intolerance. You look at what these Antifa did in Charlottesville. Obviously, they look pretty intolerant to me. They wouldn't even let people speak. So we don't have any monopoly on intolerance or discrimination. Well, Harvard discriminates against white people. We don't have any monopoly on discrimination. So, you know, when they're trying to discredit us, our movement, and us personally by saying we have a monopoly on all these things, but when in fact we don't. And I think, you know, it's always good to point that out. It's always good to say, whenever you know they accuse us of something, say, would you accuse a non-white of the same thing in comparable circumstances? And, you know, the answer is always no, they wouldn't.
Yeah, but I mean, what do you do when these people just pretend that they would? That always annoys me. Like when I point out, like you would never advocate turning every black country non-black and then harassing, threatening, and slandering them if they object. Oh, I'd be fine with that. You know, you get these anti-whites that do that and pretend that they would, that they'd be fine with that. I just personally, it's just like
one of the most annoying things. Well, you can ask him to, you know, provide examples, I guess. You know, did you ever tell Liberia to change their constitution so that, like, the Liberian constitution only allows blacks to become naturalized? So.
Yeah, what I do, because when they do this, I just think of it, all right, this guy's just trying to do something in front of an audience, so I will tell the audience, or I will make it clear to him that nobody in that audience believes him. Nobody believes that you would advocate and think it would be perfectly acceptable to do such a thing to black countries.
Yeah, that's a good, just say, yeah. Point out over and over, yeah. You would never do that to a non-white. Just say, yeah. You would never say anything like that to a non-white. You would never say anything like that to a non-white. Force them to disprove you.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to put it. Quick way. You would never say that to a non-white. You're just anti-white. Every genocide in history was pushed by people that thought that they were doing the right thing. You know what I mean? I doubt any historical reference to genocide did the perpetrators think that they were evil people doing the wrong thing. I don't think that's ever been the case.
Yeah, that brings up the quote, all it takes for evil to flourish is for good people to do nothing.
Yeah,
I don't agree with that at all. What you gotta do is convince a lot of people, probably millions of people, that evil is good.
Yep.
But they don't see it as evil, right? It's evil to us, but, you know, but how do you, I mean, what we're talking about here is brainwashing. It's that conditioning from birth that we've all been under. And it's an interesting question, Jeff, about how are white people going to deal with breaking out of that conditioning? You know, just regular white people who have been programmed to believe that, you know, we're all equal, all men are equal, you know, immigrants, you know, all the things that were taught from birth, and that now we're reconditioning them. And as they start to break out of that, how are they going to react?
Now, we do actually have a template for that. In fact, we just had a very recent one on 60 Minutes, right? Except, you know, in the opposite direction. How did they treat this guy that, you know, supposedly found the right path?
Cracks me up.
He showed all this contrition, you know, and okay, that's what, you know, that's the process that white people are going to have to go through, except in the other direction.
Yeah.
So I guess, you know, my point is we do have a template for it. You know, we can at least look at that and see how they went about that,
Yeah, that guy had a TED talk. His name is Christian Picciolini.
Yeah.
He did a TED talk, and he retweeted something about TED talks and how he was a racist that turned anti-racist and got a TED talk. Well, you know, I'm a former anti-white. I actually am. So where's my TED talk?
Yeah, maybe we could do an interview of you and show you how this process went, and do, you know, just mirrored exactly like the interview that.
Exactly. I mean, I grew up as a naive kid. And easily influenced by, you know, media and Hollywood and entertainment, and, you know,
and you were an anti-white,
right? Know? I thought it was cool to lie about white people and lie about our history, and thought I was doing the right thing, telling white lies.
How were you recruited into anti-white?
Right. How was I recruited into these anti-white extremists? Organizations, no, but
what?
I was.
Why do you hate white people?
I joined
so
like an anti-white organization, but the truth is, I mean, I grew up pretty much an anti-white, and that changed over the years when I realized like all the views that I had were not towards non-whites were not reciprocated. That's basically what changed me, to be honest. And then one day I saw the mantra, and I'm like, okay, yeah, there we go. That's what's going on, and ran with that. But yeah, I mean, if you want to know what actually changed my view, is that my views towards non-whites were not reciprocated. That's when I started questioning things. And that's why I think that when the like white anti-whites, like on the Democrats or whatever, once they realize that their views towards non-whites are not reciprocated towards them, then that's when the big change is going to start happening.
Yeah, no, I was just saying there quickly that that's what you said, you know, how often people decide validity of a concept based on consensus. It's right. The most liked post, so it must be valid. And I think that, you know, that's so true. That was that's a great insight there.
Ultimately, that's kind of what we're waiting for, is somebody like a Tucker Carlson to start talking, calling massive immigration, forced assimilation, genocide. Because I personally know people in real life that they're not joining up with me. They know it's all true, but they're not joining up with me because there's nobody in the mainstream vindicating our claims.
Yes.
You know, they'll talk about white genocide, about Ciccarello when he's talking about killing people. They'll make it about killing people. But as far as the immigration and assimilation thing, they're not calling it genocide. So some of these people are just waiting for, a George Foreman salesman, you know, George Foreman grill kind of thing.
And some people believe the television more than their own experience.
Exactly. Yeah, that's true.
Exactly. Yeah. And unfortunately, I think it might be the majority of people that are this way. So right now we've got all the self-thinkers, the people that can, you know, no matter who says something, as long as there's validity to it, they'll accept it. We've got those people on our side. And now we're just waiting for the sheeple essentially find somebody that they quote unquote respect as a spokesman on political ideas to sign off on what we're saying.
We got to start our own news show. The official news.
The official news suits
and ties and fancy camera work and backgrounds and all that. Real nice table. Yeah.
It was
But I'm not aesthetic for video, but I could definitely make a high quality news version, but I wouldn't be able to be me doing it.
It's funny. That's what, you know, I was talking with HD as well yesterday that, he was saying he was getting all frustrated about how people are news hounds and everyone wants news and, he was expressing concern to me about writing news articles or, you know, constantly writing articles on the news. And, I think, as I said to him, I think it's actually really important to be doing from our perspective. I think, you know, kind of like White Genocide Project was doing the same sort of thing. I know nobody knows where Good's gone, but we really want to report on happenings from our perspective, you know, pointing out the anti-whitism, pointing out the policies for white genocide, you know, whatever it might be, but from our perspective. And I think, you know, we might really get some traction on that.
Well, look at the way our enemies do it. They always throw in their talking points whenever they can. They throw in racist, Nazi, supremacist, bigot whenever they can. Yeah. You know, they say that this is the legacy of the white patriarchy and racism and whenever they possibly can. Yeah. They work it into every story they possibly can. They work. Yeah. They work global. Look how they work global warming in every story they possibly can. You know,
it's just a matter of copying and pasting their entire articles and substituting our words for theirs.
When they do it, they just change the names and the dates. Yeah,
right.
Beyond the terminology and the talking points, there's the narratives. Now they have their set of narratives. They're the Holocaust, colonialism, slavery. We have to develop our narratives, which is basically a story, a coherent story. So our narrative is, all races conquered and enslaved. You know, that's a narrative. That's a kind of at least a germ of a narrative. Our narrative can be, we got rid of hunger. We got rid of slavery. We got rid of... That's kind of whites are wonderful, though. But it is... It is, you know, it's a counter narrative. You know, so we have to weave all these narratives. We have to develop this set of narratives, and then everything we say is consistent with those narratives, right?
Yeah.
everything we emphasize and talk about is consistent with that set of narratives. Like the narrative, you know, whites were in America first, and then the Siberians came and killed them. You know, there's a narrative. The Reds counter their narrative. It's a narrative that, well, their narrative is their narrative for slavery is roots, right? A bunch of evil white people, no Jews, by the way. All white Christians went in there, kidnapped a bunch of black people. Most of them died on the trip over. They were horribly abused, barely fed. And that's their narrative. But the real narrative, we can just say the truth, which is, well, blacks kidnapped and enslaved their fellow blacks and then sold them like peanuts to the highest bidder. You know, they sold them to everybody. Most of them went to Arabs, actually. And that's our narrative. Our narrative is slavery? Well, yeah. Over a million white people were enslaved by North Africa, kidnapped and enslaved by North Africans. They went as far as Iceland. You know, that's our narrative. You know, Turks kidnapped and enslaved millions of white people. There's our narrative. Japanese have a horrible colonial record. You know, we can kind of embellish on that. That's our narrative. The Turks have a horrible colonial record. You know, this is our narrative. This is our counter-narrative. And that narrative gets, you know, repeated and repeated and woven in anywhere we can. You know, everybody wants to live in white countries. There's our narrative. Why, if whites are so horrible, why does everyone want to live in white countries?
Mm-hmm. There's a couple there that I don't know that I would talk about, especially the, you know, slavery and blacks selling blacks, and I don't think that that's very effective. I mean, I get what you're saying. I think that there's a lot there, you know, that is true, that, you know, if whites are so evil, then why does everyone want to live in white countries? If we're the oppressors, then, you know, I guess, yeah, that's a fine line, I would think. I mean, maybe you have a lot more ability to be able to talk about that without getting off, you know, without tailgating. But I reckon if someone started me on that, I'd say something and then I'd be off and kind of defend myself.
Yeah.
And think that I said.
I do it all the time. I'll tailgate on too. I mean, essentially what I say is no race is more guilty of slavery than blacks. If they have no guilt, then neither do I. And then I move on. The thing about all this, the whole mantra stuff, I mean, somebody can pick it up. Like, if Tucker Carlson one day decided to go through our shit and start looking over our stuff, within a week he'll be better at it than I am. I mean, that's just that's just the way it is. Some people can pick it up. And that's what's so frustrating, seeing, you know, smart people like Spencer that could be tearing up the anti-whites left and right, just totally doing stuff that doesn't really work or matter too much.
I think these narratives are important, though. This is, you see them in every sitcom, you see them in every movie repeated. So I think they really do have an effect on people. So yeah. I think we have to develop our own narratives. Like this American History X narrative, they just repeated that again in the 60 Minutes, right?
Yeah, that's basically what they were looking for.
They just repeat the American History X. They did it again in the movie Imperium. You know, it's the same narrative. They just keep repeating it.
But I mean, what they're doing with that narrative, it doesn't work, because basically what they're saying is they're pretending that, like, people like us three go around stomping random brown people for no reason.
And blowing things up.
Right, that this Christian Piccolini guy has figured out the way to counter it and how to escape it. Well, no, he hasn't figured out how to escape the alt-right, because nothing he did or stood for is it really any relation to what we're talking about. So, but that's their narrative, is that he somehow escaped it. At the end of the day, their only narrative with that is that if you don't want white genocide, it means you want to stomp brown people. That was really their only message that they were trying to put out there.
Okay.
Isn't our narrative...
am I wrong about that, Jeff?
No. No. It's one big straw man, basically. But the point is, I think the narratives work, and we have to develop our own.
So isn't our main narrative, like, it's not okay to be anti-white?
Well, you gotta you got to turn this into a story, Laura. Story with a beginning, a middle, and end. Characters, plot, dialogue.
Flooding all white countries, millions of non-whites, and forced assimilating us as white genocide.
So basically, they've got their script of that anybody who doesn't hate or anybody that's against white genocide hates brown people and wants to go around beating up random brown people. That's their script. That's they got a story, a character. And is that your point, Jeff? And that we need to do something that counters that?
Well, that we need to develop our own narratives. We may need, you know, counter that directly or counter it indirectly, but our own narratives. Something beyond just talking points. These stories, people have literary minds. They think in story terms.
I mean, but isn't that the story? Isn't when you know, the painting the picture, the images of all the people flooding into only white countries, all in only white countries, you know, forced assimilation and showing, I mean, you could show everything that shows forced assimilation.
You do it in a story form, you're not in a documentary. Okay.
All right, so you want to act it out.
Yeah. Right. That's what they do. They turn it into a story where people, something happens, there's dialogue. So you know. It's not a documentary. It's not a polemic. You're not just trying to explain it flat out. You're showing it in a story form.
Well,
are
I mean,
we not there yet?
No,
I'm confused. Are you talking like doing a movie?
That's what I'm thinking too. Like
or an anime. I mean, because I don't think we could do that. We could probably do an animation or something. But
well, just the scripts for now.
The script of like a sitcom, that's what you're talking about.
If you want to write something out, something short, like. To outline what
well,
you're talking
about.
Well, how about
just two women talking with each other. Just, they walk into a diner, they sit down at a table, and they start talking. And one of them is starting to come out of demoralization. So she starts saying, well, you know, I've heard this white genocide thing. And at first, of course, I didn't believe it at all. I thought it was crazy. But then the more I thought about it, you know, and they're talking with each other. You know, so their dialogue. That would be a story.
Mm-hmm.
There's one example.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they thrash out all the things that, you know, that we thrashed out. And then she says, well, you're just a racist. You're not a racist, are you? You know, she says, well, what does that term even mean? You know, they would have a dialogue, you know, just sitting at a diner. Okay. You could write it out, you know, you wouldn't even have to act it out, but you could act it out too. That'd be better. And in film.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, that kind of scene would be in a Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
And to do that without, or a sitcom or something like that, but without that format, it would be difficult to pull off.
I mean, even if you're talking without a short YouTube video, like, are you saying that a real life is better than animation?
I mean, ultimately, it's better to make something that doesn't look like propaganda. When that kind of conversation happens in a movie, it doesn't really seem like propaganda.
Right. You want to make it look natural and normal as much as possible. Correct.
Right. I mean, if we do that in a small segment, it's going to appear to be a commercial or propaganda. That's the problem. Without having the ability to do that in a Hollywood movie. I agree with you entirely. That belongs in a Hollywood movie, and I'd love to see it. That would be my favorite scene ever in my life. But without that kind of power and you know, filmmaking and being able to do that, it's kind of difficult.
Do you feel that doing this in real life would have more impact than it being an animation?
Possibly marginally, but filming it would be putting it in a animation in a video, whether it's animated or not, would be more powerful than just say an audio, and an audio would be more powerful, I think, than just the writing the script down.
Doesn't a narrative come once the population is conditioned? Like they keep pushing their narrative you know, it.
No, they were. I remember this fugitive when they were. This is in the 64 or something, 67. Mm-hmm. The fugitive, he comes to a town and there's a bunch of white kids are harassing a little Mexican, poor little Mexican kid. You know, they're just harassing him for no reason. They're following basically the American History X script, and our hero, the fugitive, comes and stops all this. You know, and saves the poor little Mexican kid, and they, you know, and they weave it into the story. Okay, that was in mid-60s,
mm-hmm.
you know, when people were still pro-white. And there's all sorts of those things.
Yeah, all right. And but I mean, honestly, the only way to do that is to get somebody like a producer, director, to get in on it. I'm all for it, obviously, but yeah. It's just a difficult thing to do, to find somebody to do that.
The amount of equipment you would need, like even if we were to try and do something like that.
You know what? You don't need that much. You need a camera, a microphone, and everything else. Yeah. You can do it on your computer.
That kind of stuff really only works when, I mean, essentially you'd have to make a movie about bunny rabbits or some unrelated topic and slip that in. I mean, in order for it to, in my opinion, to be effective. If you just film that scene, it's just going to look like a commercial and it's going to look like propaganda. That's my whole thinking.
Is it a bad thing?
Well, you might have to develop a whole sitcom or something.
Well, I mean, honestly, I think a better way to do something like that is to just grab a good camera, go around and start talking to people.
Mm. Yeah, I like that. I like that idea too.
It's not a story though.
It's not a story. It's an interesting insight. But I mean, it doesn't have to be like a full length movie, but you could do short, you know, this takes a team of people to be together to do this sort of thing. Like we would all have to be together. Like how the hell are we going to film something like this? You know, but it's a great idea. I mean, people like also what HD and I were talking about, people want to be entertained,
yeah.
You know, so if there are these little short videos that are coming out with, you know, little storylines or something, and you know, they might not be, I don't know, what's a 20, 30 minutes? I don't know. That they look forward to watching these little, you know, skits or something. That could be very effective.
If it's done right, you know, I think it'll work.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it and make it professional. I mean, you can rent like Hollywood cameras from a local store. I mean, they rent them out for half a day or something. It's kind of expensive, but mm-hmm. you know, if you get everything set up and get some actors, I mean, you don't want to just do this with us people up the street that have no acting experience. You probably want to find some actors, either pro bono that will just do it for the credits, or you know, maybe pay somebody.
And want to ruin their career.
that's the whole other thing, is right. Are you willing to ruin your career? Otherwise, yeah. I mean, if you're not doing
Carrie Bowe.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's not going to be very professional. I mean, actors usually pull it off better than normal people. But you might be able to find somebody that can act well and isn't actually an actor to do this, but. I don't know. I mean, I'm not against this at all. I'm just trying to think of how to make it the most effective. And in my opinion, the most effective way would be to slip it into an hour and a half movie about, you know, something completely off topic. That's how they do it.
Sure. That would be the ultimate, man. That would be like amazing. Could you imagine? That'd be huge.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to see more of our work, please visit our website, fightwhitegenocide.com.